This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
And welcome. Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou's extradition proceedings will go ahead. And today we're waiting for the fallout from that BC Supreme Court decision that came down yesterday. Associate Chief Justice Heather Holmes ruled that a key legal test to extradite had been met, that the criminal conduct alleged by the U.S. must also be considered criminal in Canada. Now, a state-backed Chinese media outlet says this decision will, quote, make Canada a pathetic clown. There will no doubt be more economic consequences. Canadian businesses are already hit hard with a 43% decline in bilateral dealings in 2019. Remember, Meng was arrested in December 2018. And what about the two Michaels? Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig have been held in harsh Chinese jails in retaliation for this for 535 days. And as you heard in Bob's News, in the midst of all this, China is cracking down on Hong Kong, and the U.S. says Hong Kong has lost its autonomy. That is a declaration that could come with punitive action. I'd like to hear from you. What do you think of the Supreme Court decision? Was it the right one? Our government says judiciary independent. They have nothing to say about it. China doesn't get that. The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And right now, let's go to Chuck Kwan, the former chair of the Toronto Association for Democracy in China, and Charles Burton, a senior fellow at the McDonald Laurier Institute and an expert on China-Canada relations. Welcome to you both. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Good to speak with you, Libby and Chuck.
Okay, well, Charles, what is your reaction to this decision?
Well, I read, I read the decision. I think it was a very well argued judicial decision, which suggests that the double criminality provisions of our extradition treaty with the United States apply in this case. That what the United States is alleging Ms. Meng did is also something that would be criminal in Canada, which is bank fraud. I think that if people have committed serious crimes, that they should be held accountable. And so this is not the end of it. She hasn't been found guilty. We're simply determining whether she should be sent to the United States to face these charges there. And, she can prove her innocence, so much the better. If, in fact, she's found guilty of serious charges, then obviously she should pay the penalty for that. In terms of the relationship between Canada and China, if there had been a determination by Justice Holmes that Ms. Meng should be allowed to go back to China, that the extradition doesn't stand up in terms of the terms of the treaty, I don't think that necessarily would have been a good thing. As we know, the Chinese government staged a photo op showing of various people, not social distancing, incidentally, holding up victory signs and celebrating Ms. Meng's release, and that could have further emboldened the Chinese government to believe that their policy of imposing arbitrary non-tariff barriers to violate Canadian and Chinese trade contracts, resulting in losses of billions of dollars to farmers, and their policy of hostage diplomacy to try and pressure the Canadian government was successful.
I want to get to that in a moment, but first let's bring Chuck in. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Libby.
I want to get to that photo op in a moment, but what's your reaction to this decision?
Well, I think I think personally that this is the right decision for the judge to be making, as Charles have said. Certainly, in the heart of my heart, I wish it would have gone differently, just because, you know, we have the two mic hosts to think about. But I want to draw your attention to that photo op on Saturday, you know, 3 days before the so-called quote-unquote expected victory. It just shows you the arrogance of how China is now dealing with middle power like Canada. If you would notice in the last year or two, China has been using languages like admit your fault or admit to a mistake and correct your mistakes before we get punished, you know, you get punished. This is the language that a principal will use on a student or a very paternalistic father will use on his children. And this is the way that, unfortunately, China is treating Canada like a little kid that needs to obey it.
A pathetic clown.
It's a clown.
Yeah, and then,
So in that sense, it's really, really awful. And, you know, no defense of China, but obviously our neighbors to the south is also acting a very belligerent way. So we're caught between two belligerent bullies. And this is something that I'm not very optimistic that this will resolve soon.
Yeah, Charles, again, before I get to the question of the of that photo op, because I think we have to get into it a little further, but the Chinese embassy here, I'm just going to read a quote from them. The purpose of the U.S. is to bring down Huawei and other Chinese high-tech companies. Canada has been acting in the process as an accomplice of the United States. The whole case is entirely a grave political incident. Do they just refuse to understand what our independent judiciary is, or do they have a point here?
Well, I think it's both, really. I mean, obviously, this matter has been inflicted on Canada by the United States, requesting that Canada extradite Ms. Meng under the terms of our bilateral treaty. You know, that goes without saying. The other matter is the Chinese government's insistence that if they put enough pressure on our prime minister, that he will call up a judge and order that Ms. Meng be returned to Beijing forthwith, thereby avoiding the Chinese government's fear that Ms. Meng, if she is transported to the United States, might provide information to the U.S. government about, you know, the nature of Huawei's connection to Chinese military intelligence and security agencies as part of a plea bargain. So I think from the point of view of the Chinese, they don't acknowledge that our judicial independence is real, because none of their political institutions as put forward are anything more than a sham. You know, they claim the National People's Congress is the supreme organ of state power, but it's a rubber stamp parliament, and the supreme order of state power, of course, is the Standing Committee of the Chinese Communist Party's Politburo. And certainly in China, any pretense towards judicial independence is given the lie by the fact that all judicial decisions are subject to review by the politics and law commissions of the Chinese Communist Party at the same level as the court. So, you know, I do think that there is a tragic misunderstanding here, but I think it's also the Chinese government wanting to demonstrate to Canada that we are in a weak position, and if we want to have the economic benefits of trade with China, that we have to comply with what China wants, and that we should have somehow or other made a choice between China and the United States in the Meng matter and ignored the extradition treaty and done what China wanted. And this latest decision, I think they were convinced that we were going to release her, and then when they found out that we haven't, it's caused them even more anger and frustration.
I would like to open this up. I know that in months previous when we talked about this case, we had a lot of listeners who thought we should let her go. Why should we get in the middle of this? And the United States is not necessarily going to thank us for helping them out in this matter. On the contrary, they might be punishing us in terms of trade and all of that as well. So let me give the numbers out again, 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740. We are talking about a BC Supreme Court decision from yesterday that the extradition of Meng Wanzhou should and will go ahead. It was not a decision that the Chinese government was expecting. On the weekend, this was baffling to me. They staged a photo op on the steps of the courthouse. They had Meng and her team with thumbs up. You know, to me, what that reminded me of more than anything else, but with a smiley face, that scene in The Godfather, you know, where they found the head of a horse in bed, it was a, I took it to be a threat with a smiling face. Did I read too much into it, Charles?
Well, I don't know what was going on there. It looked very suspicious to me. I think maybe it was trying to send out a propaganda signal that, you know, this is how it should be and that Canada has been manipulated by the states. Of course, you know, the United States has not been helpful to us in the Meng matter the way it should have. You know, they haven't assisted us in pressuring the Chinese government to remove the trade sanctions against Canadian canola seeds and other matters that have hit us in the bottom line. And they have not been very proactive in assisting us to gain the release of Culbertson's favor or even to get consular access. U.S. Consular cases have been continuing using electronic means, phoning and video. Canada's not been given that. So I think from that point of view, there is some virtue in the argument. But, you know, the way the Chinese government is playing it, I think, does feed into a general mood in China to try and distract the attention of the Chinese people from the failings of the regime in dealing with COVID-19. And express more nationalism and get people more keyed up about negative foreign actors trying to undermine China, whether it's in Hong Kong or the border with India or Taiwan. They're all over the place with their wolf warrior diplomacy, making very lurid claims that cannot be, which are not valid. And I think it's a matter of concern in the regime that domestically they're weak, and therefore if they drum up more nationalistic sentiment on the part of China, that they will unite behind the leadership of Xi Jinping, which I think is a leadership that many are now questioning inside the PRC.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls. We've got Pat in Toronto. Hi, Pat.
Good morning, or good afternoon. We have to uphold this. If we don't, all our treaties are just going to fall away. The Chinese are extremely good businessmen. I mean, I worked in Indonesia, where the Chinese population makes up less than 5% of the population, yet the Chinese control approximately 90% of the wealth in the country. So they're using their strong-arm tactics, and we just have to stand up to them. Either that or they will run the world at some point anyway. We know that, but we can't let our democracy fall on this one.
Okay, Pat, thanks for that. I've also heard a legal argument, and Chuck and Charles, maybe you will have an answer to this, is saying that if we ruled that the extradition was not legal and would not go ahead, it would impede Canada's ability to extradite people that we want. Do you agree with that? I know that there are always legal opinions on both sides of any issue. Chuck?
Well, I think that's very true. There's a reciprocity involved. If we let this system falls apart, then there's no guarantee that we could not extradite other people from, say, Europe or other places where a potential criminal is wanted back in Canada. And I just want to point out the kind of hypocrisy in this thing. Several years ago, when our government was trying to negotiate a free trade agreement with China, China had insisted that the extradition law be part of the agreement. That means China has every right to extradite its citizens from Canada back to China if they deemed to commit a crime in China. So imagine if we were for any communist regime that can trump up any charges they want to silent dissent, they would attempt to extradite anybody who is or has been a Chinese citizen back to Beijing for trial and, of course, imprisonment. So this is a weapon that China wanted to use for its own citizens or past citizens. So this is something that I think is also points to the kind of bullying that China is doing.
Okay, let's hear from Tony in Brampton. Hello, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I think China is a bully, and the best way to deal with a bully is to stand up to them. We should develop markets in other countries and our own technology. And the same way Trump is a bully, we should stand up to him. He's on his way out. I think we should stand our ground.
Okay, Tony, thanks for that. Except I want to point out one thing is that, you know, with the rise of protectionism in the United States, who are our biggest trading partners, everybody's saying we really have to develop trade with the Asia Pacific, China being the biggest player there. And now if we're not trading with the U.S. and we're not trading with China, you know, that kind of narrows the field a lot, doesn't it, Charles?
Well, I think that, you know, Tony's got a point, of course, that we have to stand up to bullies, otherwise they continue to bully us. There are a couple of things here. Prior to their barring our canola seed exports to China, our external trade to China was 4.7%. Now it's down to about 4%. That compares with 78% to the United States. So at present, you know, because of the enormous trade imbalance due to China's imposition of non-tariff barriers on Canadian access to that market, our dependence with China is relatively small. The other aspect of it is that most of our exports are agricultural commodities and minerals, that kind of thing, natural resources. And those are on a global market, so that if China, in retaliation, barred Canadian commodities trade into China, then that would free up markets elsewhere. I mean, obviously, that's not a desirable consequence, but, you know, there's only a limited number of canola seeds grown in the world, and the market exists for that commodity. So if we can't sell to China, we can import substitute. You know, we have a similar situation now with China and the U.S.'s trade deal where China promises to source a large amount of commodities like soybeans from the United States, thereby taking away our market in China. But then, you know, we'll simply have to find alternative markets for soybeans that previously had been buying U.S. soybeans. It's a complicated question, but if we don't demand that China comply with the international rules-based order in trade and diplomacy by saying we just won't engage with you if you won't play by the accepted rules of fairness and reciprocity, then we can expect more and more of this, and Canada will be in a worse and a worse position. So I think Tony has a strong point there, and I think our government really has to take what Tony's saying seriously and see if we can come up with alternatives through the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other means to reduce our dependence on China's trade for building Canadian prosperity.
Okay, Barry in North York, hello.
Hi. I would like to ask your experts a question, and that is, I'm wondering why the United States hasn't been more involved in this, unless I'm missing something in the news. All he does is say, Trump says, thank you for helping, but I think you should get more involved in when China tells us that we're immoral, they have the audacity to do that with what they do with their people and our people as well. But just, I think they should get more involved because we're, we're doing something for them. We're doing them a favor.
Well, yeah, I don't think you'd get any argument about that here. But Chuck, do you want to respond?
I think the current regime in the U.S. Doesn't care. They're willing to sacrifice Canada to pursue their own transactional goal of bringing China down. So in that sense, Trump is just dangling this whole Huawei business or the freeing of Meng Wanzhou business just to get ahead of China in their kind of superpower fight. So unfortunately, we are caught between a rock and a hard place among when the two elephants fight. Our little animals get hurt and get trampled upon. And that's just, as Trump would say, price of doing business. So we pretty much have to fight on our own and to be unified with other middle countries like Australia, who is now facing the same wrath from China as we have done, you know, half a year before. Because Australia has been pushing for the WHO to investigate COVID-19 origins in China and so forth, China got very upset and started putting 80% tariff on any barley import into China from Australia, as well as other things as well, beef. So China is actually fighting a war in several fronts. Not the least is the they want to take over control of Hong Kong. And only with strong opposition, a common kind of enemy approach from the West, can we achieve anything better to fight this bully, as I think Tony had mentioned before.
I want to get to Hong Kong in a minute, but you bring up something that we haven't touched on yet, and that is China and COVID-19 and their response. And to my way of thinking, our Canadian government has really been appeasing China. And there's no, I mean, would you agree that China covered up the extent of the problem for quite a while before starting to disclose while our government was praising them for being transparent? Charles?
I agree. I think that at the time of, you know, treating China with soft gloves, you know, kid gloves is over. And I think Canadians realize that, you know, I think we realize that our government has been kind of too deferential the way we play the China card. And I think, as you know, your recent poll, for example, shows that a lot more Canadians are disapprove of China. And of course, our non kind of stance against China, that tells us that we have been on the wrong track. COVID-19 response is one thing as well. But also, I think, you know, just bring back to the Hong Kong, I think we also have to take a stronger stance because Canada is actually a witness or a co-sponsor or guarantor of the Hong Kong, you know, Sino-British joint venture, joint declaration.
Charles, before we get to Hong Kong, what's your view of the way Canada has been responding to China on COVID-19?
Well, I think that we were misled by the Chinese regime with regard to the nature of that disease, specifically early indications of person-to-person transmission, which China then relayed through the WHO. And the WHO apparently is not inclined to challenge the information they received from China, as they had done when China was issuing false information about SARS. So for political reasons, China attempted to suppress the information. As a result, Canada did not engage in measures to limit travel from China into Canada or to engage in vigorous contact tracing, resulting in the greater spread of COVID-19 in Canada and thousands of unnecessary tragic deaths due to the Chinese dissembling on the matter. So when Australia put forward there should be an independent inquiry as to what happened so that this will not happen again, China then lashed out at Australia and suggested that they would stop the import of Australian wines, Australian meat, limit Chinese tourists to Australia, and limit Chinese students from studying in Australia, which is a major hit to the university sector. So obviously China is very sensitive about the missteps that the regime made in the early stages of the epidemic, which could have, one hopes, limited its spread to the Wuhan area. And I think they're worried domestically that people inside China feel that the government managed it very poorly. And much to China's dismay, places like Hong Kong and Taiwan have had very low levels of death because they did not trust the Chinese information as Canada did and took much more vigorous measures early on. So, you know, it's not looking good for China. And I think this COVID-19 is something that poses a really strong domestic threat to the integrity of Xi Jinping's leadership that could have pretty horrendous consequences if we start to see a breakdown in the stability of the world's most populous nation.
Let's take a call from David in Queensville. Hi, David.
Hi, Libby. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. And I appreciate a lot of things, but I won't mention them right now. I guess my point is, after listening to the conversation, it is not the good Chinese people and American people we're being victimized by.
Yep.
So we need positive propaganda. We need truth from Canada to the Chinese and American citizens, especially the younger generations. We need it in our own country because of the divide between Zoomers, Millennials, and the Doomer Gloomers. So explaining our situation, that we're caught between these governments, these bad governments, because it was the government propaganda by Hitler that created the World War II. Come on. This is what we're leading up to if we don't try to prevent the escalation and focus more on education. Let the truth guide the good people everywhere.
Okay, just like thank you. That. Yep. I did recently an interview with the human rights activist, our former Justice Minister, Erwin Kotler, and he stopped and corrected me and wanted to make a real distinction between China and the Chinese Communist Party. So, yes, I agree. Chuck, let's talk about Hong Kong for a moment here. So they're cracking down on Hong Kong. Why now? And what should we do about it? We have 300,000 Canadians in Hong Kong.
Well, they're doing it because under the cover of COVID-19, obviously they felt that the protests that Hong Kong carry out over the last 9 months is basically a challenge to the rule and a challenge to splitting up, actually trying to split up China. So this is something that's very dear to China's heart, is to unify Hong Kong and Taiwan, as well as putting Tibet and Xinjiang region under more control of China. So this is their way of saying, okay, enough about waiting for this for 50 years. We're just going to do it right now just to prevent any more disaster coming in. But the long game is that I think China and the U.S. are playing a kind of a game of chicken and seeing who blinks first. Obviously, Hong Kong is very important to China at both as a port of entry of all the investment money. You see that people like Alibaba, the big companies, all have the listing in Hong Kong so that they can attract foreign capital, and not in Shanghai, which is the domestic, you know, biggest domestic capital market. So, you know, this is something that we're going to see played out. And my worry is that China is going to sacrifice Hong Kong just to get their way. And this is something that I would not, I would say Xi Jinping is really, really bargaining on, that he could take control of Hong Kong without angering the world. And I think to an extent he's succeeding.
Charles?
Well, I think that certainly, we have to have concern about the 300,000 Canadians in Hong Kong. And if there is a movement by the People's Armed Police to engage in repressive measures to round up people who support democracy and don't support the Chinese Communist Party and don't want to see destruction of the independence of the judiciary there, freedom of expression, that the curriculum in the schools shouldn't be changed over to the same one as in China, that we have to be worried that the Chinese government may not recognize their Canadian citizenship and will not extend consular protection to them, such as we've seen in some other cases of ethnic Chinese. I think in general, you know, the previous caller's observation is so true. A person of Chinese origin in Canada have no connection to the Chinese Communist Party's alleged false reporting on the spread of the coronavirus. You know, our Canadian Chinese built this country and make an enormous contribution to the good and just society that Canada is, and we should be celebrating them. They already have enough trouble by pressure from agents of the Chinese regime.
Absolutely.
Trying to get them to be disloyal, and then you combine that with stupid racists, you know, suggesting that they're not, that they shouldn't be in Canada. I just find it appalling, and we have to stand with Chinese Canadians and assure that they're fully recognized as contributors to our society and valued members of our community.
Again, but back to Hong Kong, Charles, I mean, what should Canada be doing?
Well, I think certainly, you know, the time has come for us to make, to draw some line in the sand. And I think that because of the violation of the Sino-British Joint Declaration, which, as Chuck pointed out, Canada endorsed at the request of the government of China and Britain at the time when it was lodged with the UN, that this is a gross violation of an international treaty and a gross violation of the guarantee of protection of the human rights of persons in Hong Kong. And so we do have the Magnitsky list. You know, we could start sanctioning Chinese officials who have been complicit in these violations of international law by freezing their assets in Canada and not allowing them to come to our shores. That is a measure which other countries are considering, including the United States, who are considering putting all of the members of China's National People's Congress and senior communists and other officials onto the sanction list to express to the Chinese regime that there are costs for this kind of action and that we simply don't want to be collaborating and facilitating what you're doing, and we're going to name names and make consequences for the things that are being done to the fine people in Hong Kong who value democracy and freedom and want to maintain the distinctive Cantonese culture of Hong Kong against the incursions of an authoritarian one-party regime.
Okay, we are basically out of time. I just want to give you 20 seconds each. How is this going to impact the two Michaels? Chuck?
I don't think we have any way of impacting the two Michaels case. I think we're pretty much up to the mercy of China. I agree with Charles. We need to stand up and start doing more concrete action in censoring China. China will respect a strong opposition. Otherwise, they'll just continue to bully us.
And Charles, last 20 seconds, the two Michaels?
I'm very worried about what the Chinese government is going to do to these two innocent, upstanding Canadian citizens. And I think that Canada really has to, instead of trying to engage through quiet diplomacy or policy of appeasement to try and jolly the Chinese along to release them, that we have to start engaging in substantive retaliation to demand that Kovrig and Svaber be released back to Canada as soon as possible while they're still in good health.
Okay. Thank you both, Chuck Kwan and Charles Burton. I appreciate it very much.
Good to speak with you again. Bye, Chuck.
Nice.
Bye.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.